The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. This is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com. Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Radio's Gil Alexander, everybody. And the return of Kelly Bidlin.
Hey, how we doing?
From assignment.
That's right, from assignment.
Where were you on assignment, by the way? We always wanted to know.
All around. Fountain Blue, down
nice.
At the M. Maybe around at the Bellagio at a bad time this weekend.
What'd you learn? Yeah. Anything?
No, nothing. No, just okay. Killed brain cells, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Glad to have you back. It's U.S. Open week.
Glad to be back. Glad to be back together.
Yeah, man. Reunited, and it feels so good.
That's right.
On the show today, Mark Borchardt on Major League Baseball. Kelly's got some U.S. Open golf thoughts. Drew Dinsick in his new Tuesday spot, which is an hour number 2, talking to NBA and some tennis with us. Maybe we'll review the French Open briefly, but we'll talk tennis if he's got any grass court plays today. And, of course, the NBA Finals. And Paul Bruno from RotoWire to talk NHL Stanley Cup Finals with us. By the way, you see this game last night? National
crazy.
Hockey League?
It was crazy.
Oh, wait, before we get to that, can I just have a bone to pick with a tweet that was read just before, as I'm driving in today, just before we got here, committing my 3 to 5 on average traffic violations on the way in. Don't do that, boys and girls. You're not driving a rocket ship like I am. Dave Ross reads this Jason Stark tweet. Jason Stark, one of our great listeners here at VSiN through the years. We love Jason Stark. And he says, he was talking about some Jeff Schwartz quote about the Steelers. And he says, watch how all these, the VSiN hosts are. He cited us as two VSiN hosts that have lost money betting against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I just want to immediately disassociate myself with you because I did it once. Yes, last year, I absolutely faded the Steelers. And that, nipped me in the butt. But you have made a career of doing this, yes?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know where you were going with this at first because you said you were going to address it. Oh, yeah.
He just coupled me in with you like I've been doing it for 10 years.
I was going to say, there is nothing inaccurate about Jason's tweet. It is. But, yes, if I was in Gil's shoes, I would probably want to distance myself a little bit, too. I believe it's... I think it was 3 years in a row under win totals.
There you go. Yeah. 3 in a row.
And how many did I miss by a half game or something? Yeah. I think it was at least 2.
God forbid I let that stand. Anyway, to the hockey.
The problem is you know, Gil, what is it, June 10th?
Oh, yeah, it's coming.
For the next 2 months.
I was going to say, that said, what could go wrong with Aaron Rodgers?
For the next 2 months, you're going to have to talk me out of betting the under on that.
I'm so with you.
Because it's the only way I could bet that.
I'm so with you. This is the hockey last night, because we will talk to Paul Bruno about this later on the show. But it was game three last night, I should say, in the Stanley Cup final. And Florida takes a 2-1 lead in the best of 7 over Edmonton with a 6-1 shellacking. But this game was marred completely. By the way, Florida cashes as a closing -142 favorite in this. This took money all day. But it was marred by Edmonton's 85 penalty minutes. They had 16 penalties in the third period alone when a melee broke out, an old-fashioned Donnybrook.
For the first, how many total fights were in the third period?
Oh,
I don't even know.
God.
The first one or two, I was like, all right, guys, like, come on. It's a blowout. Like, let's just go. Let's finish this game. But I was into it by, like, the third and fourth fight.
You were rooting for it?
Yeah.
Oilers end up with 21 penalties. 21 penalties for 85 penalty minutes in the loss. I'm no hockey officiant, hockey expert, but I'm just going to throw this out there. Maybe stay out of the penalty box. You're going to want to win this series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is, by the way, 85 penalty minutes, the most any team has recorded in a Stanley Cup final game in nearly 40 years, since the Montreal Canadiens had 90 penalty minutes in 1986 in a game where their opponent, the Calgary Flames, had 86 on the same night. That was game 4 of the 1986 Stanley Cup final. Who could forget it? And that remains the most of any team in Stanley Cup final history, but we pushed it last night with that. Many will remember the Panthers had 84 penalty minutes game 2 of the Stanley Cup final against the Golden Knights a couple years ago. Locals will remember that.
Yeah, but this
even exceeded that. So that was what marred this game, and I don't know that we have any more clarity when it comes to a Conn Smythe winner if Florida does end up winning this series and beat the Oilers in a second straight season in the Stanley Cup Finals, because the goals were scattered for the Panthers yesterday. But Edmonton, going to have to get off the proverbial schneid. This looked like, or at least it felt like to me, that they, I mean, they were on the cusp of it, right, in game two, and they did not get it done in overtime, and now Florida in the driver's seat. Florida, a minus 260 series favorite now, up 2 games to 1.
Sam Bennett, your favorite in the Conn Smythe market now, plus 175. Connor McDavid, plus 250.
Top. And Leon Draisaitl now back to 12 to 1. So the number I have is not even as good as it is now. Not even as
favorable.
What
do you got, 9?
9, yeah. 9 to 1. Bennett, plus 175. Connor McDavid, plus 250. Marchand, who scored first yesterday, he's 4 to 1. Bobrovsky in goal at plus 450. And then Draisaitl at 12 to 1. So there you go with Conn Smythe, which is definitely still all up in the air. College World Series. We have the bracket. We have 8 teams settled on. 6 different conferences represented and an independent. So only the SEC ends up with 2 teams, Arkansas and LSU, and they play each other. So if one of them is to win the College World Series, they will have to do it from the proverbial quote-unquote loser's bracket within their bracket number 2. Arkansas is the short shot to win the College World Series at 2-1, LSU plus 230. After those two teams got by, LSU made quick work of West Virginia. Arkansas continued their tormenting of Vols ace Liam Doyle. So those two teams got through. Also in bracket 2, you have the upstart, Murray State out of the Missouri Valley. Murray State was the last team to advance. They did so yesterday in Durham, where they broke Duke's heart. And this was a prop that we talked about. Jensen Lewis brought this up. Jensen and Dave Ross, the co-host of By the Books, which precede us. Jensen brought up, you know, will a regional 4 seed get to the College World Series? And I want to say it was 9-1. Well, it cashes with the Murray State Racers. They are Omaha bound for the first time in program history. Was a great game 3. The Racers thought they had eliminated the Blue Devils on an interference double play. Call was overturned, but they still got through. They are the first regional 4 seed to advance the Men's College World Series since 1999. That's in the 64-team tournament era, joining Fresno State 2008, Stony Brook in 2012, and Oral Roberts in 2023. And if you recall, Fresno State actually won it all back in 2008. So Murray State takes on UCLA. UCLA got some uncharacteristically good pitching in the Super Regional. So it's UCLA and Murray State in the first matchup in Bracket 2, along with Arkansas and LSU. And in Bracket 1, you then have Coastal Carolina out of the Sun Belt. Murray State out of the Missouri Valley. Coastal Carolina out of the Sun Belt. All these conferences are represented. They will take on Coastal Carolina, which beat Auburn in 2 thrillers down at Auburn. They'll take on Arizona out of the Big 12. Arizona reaching the College World Series for the first time in the Chip Hale era. So that will be one matchup in Bracket 1, Coastal Carolina and Arizona. And then the other one will be Oregon State, the one independent in this, taking on Louisville. Louisville got by Miami. Eddie King Jr., very hot hitting for Louisville. So those are the 8 teams. And I made my 3 bets early on. I had Vandy. I had Northeastern as my big long shot at 125-1, and I had Texas. No, no, and no. And this is not a sport where I am inclined to put bad money after bad money, because to me, it's anybody's ballgame here.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see, you know, what some of our guests have to say over the next couple of days about this field, because it is it's interesting to me where we talked about how SEC heavy this was, right, heading into the start of the tournament. Regionals get a little wacky, super regionals.
What was
a little...
it 13 teams when it all started, I believe?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I'm staring at that schedule, and it's like, do you you get a winner LSU, Arkansas, you move into that, you know, winner's side of the bracket, right? It's going to be really short odds, but is that maybe the best bet on the board, or are some of these smaller schools or dogs a little bit more live? Because I don't know about you, Gil, but I didn't hear anybody rattle off any of those names.
Coastal was the only team
Coastal,
I even considered.
Yes, right. Because they 8 rated out highly, right, on some of those sites.
Right, they rated out highly, and their odds were such that you might have considered a bet.
Right, yeah.
Yes. But in the end, no.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that plays out. All I had was, I had Florida State. They won the regional, so that was good enough. A little plus money for me on college baseball. But like you, I wasn't running to add anything
no,
yet, at least.
No. There is one other sports story that broke this morning, sports betting story that broke this morning that I just want to throw out before we move on to NBA and other things. So this Illinois state tax, David Purdom, do we have the tweet from David Purdom? David Perdomo does such a great job at ESPN covering the sports betting space. He tweeted this out in the wee hours this morning, because this was something that was you know, put forth and passed in the wee hours in Illinois. But there is going to be now, it is official, a 50-cent tax on every single bet. Every single bet. So this is a little different from what was reported last week, where it was, oh, the first 20 million bets in the state of Illinois will have a 25-cent tax, and then thereafter it'll be 50 cents. Now it's 50 cents for everything, per David Perdomo. And this is, you know, Crack and I have talked ever since, you know, PASPA was ruled unconstitutional in 2018 and, you know, paved the way for legalized sports betting in the U.S. I've used the phrase on any number of occasions, oh, this is the very type of thing when it comes to, you know, sportsbook behavior. This is the very type of thing that will push books offshore. Well, now you have a governing body that, because they want to do mass transit, I believe it's all for funding public transit and public, you know, arteries there in Illinois, they have decided that this is the way to do it, to tax betting 50 cents. Robert Walker, the director of operations at ARMS, used to be my buddy Jay Rude's boss over at MGM. He puts it best. He says, it confirms exactly what I've been worried about. The tax push through in Illinois sets a dangerous precedent. Expect other states to impose similar taxes on licensed sportsbooks whenever they need quick revenue. He was a sportsbook director for the Mirage for more than a decade. He says it comes at a time that is particularly challenging. I agree with him for the legalized sports betting industry, because you have, you know, the exchanges of the world, like Kalshi and ProfitX, making inroads as well. If only there was a state like Nevada that had provided an economic model for sports books to work out. But in Illinois, it looks like it's going to be passed on to the consumer. Good God. Coming back.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Bidlin, everybody. How's the weight loss coming? Still coming?
Meh. All right. This last weekend probably didn't help out.
Just taking a break.
Yeah.
Weight loss loves a break. Doesn't not punitive at all when you take a break from it.
Let's see, Carbone, steakhouses, a lot of poolside drinking. Yeah, I don't want to see that scale today.
It's not gonna do it.
Drew
Dinsick standing by. We'll also talk to Paul Bruno about the NHL Stanley Cup final. I just want to read some tweets here at Beating the Book. Coach Harry Ellis, we get tweets. FanDuel and DraftKings, basically a cartel, he says. If you don't want to pay the 50 cents in Illinois, there are a few legal places a better can go. Without a Black Friday-like moment for those two companies, the industry is only going to get worse. Kevin Ryan, Gil, a complete blank stare on Kelly's face when you rattled off some of Sly and the Family Stone's songs. No way he knows about them. Just an age thing. That's probably true.
Yeah, and maybe finding prices on Mark Borchard's bets, yeah.
Yes, we have to sort of navigate Mark Borchard's bets. Desert Dude, regarding college baseball, oh, this is an astute tweet, I like this. Hashtag a numbers game, he says, regarding college baseball, does the same variance construct apply as the MLB? For instance, for the best teams to make it to the College World Series would need to play many more games. Yes, I think that's fair. What Desert Dude is referring to is the stats by Lopez stat that I have thrown out, you know, a myriad of times on the show, which is 80% of NBA favorites get through in the NBA playoff series. But for it to happen in the NHL, 80% of favorites to get through, you would essentially have to play a best of 51 in each series. That's how random hockey is. So for the favorites to manifest at that rate, you would have to play that many games. I think it does apply. And by the way, baseball, I think it's best of 75 or something like that. So I do think college baseball would apply in the same way there. Judd O'Connor, I don't believe I can read your tweet. How about that? And then Ryan Hyatt, time for a flash numbers game power ranking with Gil. Power rank these three. Sly Stone, Billy Preston, Bootsy Collins. We'll understand if Kelly passes on this one. Bring in the funk. By the way, there's a 50-cent surcharge on this tweet in Chicago. Sly, number one by far. It's not even close. And then I would put Billy Preston and Bootsy second in a distant tie for second, because their solo stuff was sparse, but they have musical backgrounds. Billy Preston, obviously, with the Beatles, most famously. Bootsy with Parliament Funkadelic. So but their solo stuff was just, you know, a fraction of what Sly and the Family Stone brought to the table.
Agreed.
Drew Nitzing joins us now, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at whale underscore capper, the co-host of not one but two podcasts, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, of course, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge with his buddy Jay Croucher. How you doing, Drew?
I'm great. This is a fun conversation. If Kelly is not like specifically in tune with Sly and the Family Stone, as you kind of dive into their catalog, what you'll notice is they have been sampled ad nauseum by the rap industry.
That's everybody that Gil brings up, Drew. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, like that, yeah, like, but like they made all the music that, you know, that the rap, you know, giants stood on their shoulders.
Well, we just mentioned, and I'm glad you brought that up, because Bootsy Collins, which was mentioned in the tweet right there, Bootsy Collins had a song called I'd Rather Be With You. And there's this young kid, Donald Glover, who was in the show Atlanta. I think he created the show Atlanta. Sure. He's also a musical artist. His big hit.
Childish Gambino.
His big hit is a complete copy of Bootsy Collins' I'd Rather Be With You. It's like a whole generation who acts like it's not. It drives me crazy. We've officially run out of music, is I guess what the conclusion is.
And movies.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. No more chord progression. No more chord combinations. That have yet to be found.
Jurassic 17 coming out soon.
That's right. Before we move on to your thoughts about the NBA, it's an artful segue right there. Before we move on to that, how did the Belmont do for you? Sovereignty winning, Sovereignty's second leg of the Triple Crown, won the Derby, won the Belmont. And then, of course, tennis. Congratulations on Coco.
The party.
Yeah, journalism did.
Tennis wasn't... Tennis was amazing. Belmont was a meh for me. I didn't have journalism coming and running that race, surely. I thought Sovereignty and Baeza were the two top choices, and all of my exotics, I featured them at the top, and I had journalism third or lower. So yeah, no luck for me in the Belmont. But the French Open was, I mean, if Sinner held on and ultimately gets the victory over Alcaraz, that would have been the best French Open I've ever had from a betting standpoint. It goes down as top two. I think if I have only one French Open memory moment, or like, you know, from a betting standpoint or a content creating standpoint, the year that everybody just assumed Nadal was going to win and Djokovic beat him in the semis, I was alone on Nole Island that year. And there was external factors. I was betting irresponsibly, guys. I'll just say I was thinking irresponsibly because Bitcoin was running amok. I was flush with, you know, with the Rufus coin from the Rams Super Bowl win, and I was betting irresponsibly. And I that particular semifinal, I just remember firing on Nole, and the market continued. Shoved it in my face. And so I ended up with, aggressive stake on Djokovic to win that match and ultimately the title that year. So that stands alone as the biggest green number in my book for all of the French Opens. But this was number two. Coco Gauff was a huge reason why. But really the whole second week was awesome tennis matches and results that went pretty much exactly as I was hoping. I was getting stuff like I had Sabalenka 2-1 over Iga at like plus 250-ish. I had a lot of very favorable results go my way that week. And then ultimately Carlos spoiled the party with a level of tennis in the fourth and fifth set that I did not know was possible after playing 5 hours of tennis.
It was, dare I say, that it was one of the bets in your life that you lost that you almost had to step back from and almost like do a silent applause for the winner who vanquished your bet, because it was just so unbelievable. You're like, if I'm ever going to lose a bet, let it be that one.
100%. Well, 100%. Yes. But beyond that, like I had, my price was 250 for the title for Sinner, and it got to the mark the day of, you know, the pre-match market was heavily bet Sinner, the closed favorite.
Yes.
I don't know if people, you know, were paying attention to that or not, but that was I was surprised. I thought for sure to get out of any of my Sinner position, I was going to have to lay some absurd juice with Alcaraz. And then it was just sitting there at plus 100. And I was like, man, I got a coin flip on my hands at plus 250. I think I just ride. And if you watch that match enough times,
yeah,
I don't think it's very hard to say, well, that was a coin flip, all right.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, I'd like the you know, if again, like, I don't think it can be overstated how good of a tennis match that was. I don't think it can be overstated how important that is going to ultimately be in this next era of men's tennis, you know, to kind of help sort of flesh out the legacy and the legend of these two best players who now occupy 98% of the win probability of a major between the two of them. And I think ultimately the points in game 12 of the fifth set, where Alcaraz was all of a sudden on the ropes and it looked like Sinner could potentially win that fifth set 7-5, and in particular the cross court winner that Sinner, it wasn't a winner ultimately, but the cross court shot that Sinner hit that is a winner against 99.99% of players, Alcaraz not only gets it back in play but gets it back in play with so much depth that Sinner was just like, what the hell do I do with this?
Incredible.
Like I could not believe that point when I saw it. And if you had said, like, yeah, that happened at the end of a three set match and as you know, in a setting that wasn't for a Grand Slam title, you know, it wasn't championship type of point, then okay, sure. But in that setting at that time, 5.5 hours in, like how does that happen?
Even the final set tiebreaker, right? He wins it on a winner. That was just absurd. You know, there were so many of them. And I mentioned yesterday, I guess, the part that folks are glossing over, the first of those three championship points that he had to fight off Alcaraz in the fourth set, one of his shots hit the baseline. And because it was the first of the three, no one said anything. Sinner sort of glanced at it when he walked back to play the second point, the 15-40 point. And so it was just, there were so many little moments. It was just incredible. I just want to spin it forward to Wimbledon for a second, because you brought up Djokovic.
Sure.
I know recently you've been sort of, you've downplayed his chances. Carlos Alcaraz plus 150, Sinner plus 160. For those who don't know, grass is a very short season. Wimbledon will be here in a blink. Novak is 5-1. Anything where you're like, if he's ever going to win another one, this is his last shot at it. Anything with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could say that every time we do a slam from here to the end.
Oh, I was, well, no,
every
but I was
slam is the next last chance.
I'm referring to grass. I'm referring to grass specifically.
I know. And you know, your point is fair. Like, does he have a 5% chance to win? Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And I would even say that, like, the reason that the top of the board is so close, because like, if you're somewhat of a casual fan and you're looking at, man, I guess Alcaraz and Sinner are pretty close. Duh. We just freaking proved that very clearly. But the fact is Alcaraz is much, much more accomplished on grass. Much more. And so having just beaten Sinner and now moving on to a service that's more favorable for him, the fact that they're tied at the top is a little bit, it's not intuitive. It's definitely not like this is surely correct. And I would say that Alcaraz still in the back of my mind, he may have a bit of a Djokovic problem. Alcaraz he can flourish. He can hit peaks that no one else in tennis can. But if you can play disciplined tennis against him, you know, you can bring out the worst of him surely. And Djokovic did that to him in Australia. He could do it to him in Wimbledon. The problem is Djokovic has a massive Sinner problem. Alcaraz has a bit of a Djokovic problem. Sinner has a bit of an Alcaraz problem. Djokovic has a massive Sinner problem. I don't think he's ever beating him head to head again.
Yeah. And Sasha Zverev will never win a major, it appears, at this point.
Is he still playing?
He's still playing. He had his chances. It's never going to happen. Probably should have won the French last year. Kind of got hosed. We'll come back. His thoughts on the women. And of course, the NBA Finals. How's he feeling about his OKC tickets now? Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a full year for just $199, plus a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide, I should say, to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up now, get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide dropping like an album July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code BOOK to sign up. That's BOOK, B-O-O-K, like Ian Book. That's VSIN.com /subscribe. I said dropping like an album. There are no albums anymore, are there? No.
Nope.
Dropping like a single, something like that. Kelly would add dropping like it's hot.
Yes, I would. Mm-hmm. And then I would drop it like it's hot.
and that would be something.
Did I see something? There's a stadium that has like a record store attached to it. Think I saw, man, I am totally blanking on
who is the genius behind this.
I'm gonna Google it. Google it while we're talking to Drew. I saw this last week.
All right, Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment at @whale_capper again, Deep Dive Podcast and Bet the Edge, NBC Sports. The man is at horse races. The man knows his tennis. He knows his other sports as well. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Real quick before we get to the NBA, the ladies' side at Wimbledon, just to do fair and balanced here. Sabalenka, who loses to Coco, and by the way, congratulations to Drew. Again, when we did the French Open pod at Beating the Book, immediately identified Coco as having the best of the draw, +550 she gets at home in the French. Sabalenka is the short shot at Wimbledon, 3-1. Rybakina, who is a Wimbledon winner, 6-1. Coco, +650. And then five-time Grand Slam champ Iga Swiatek, 8-1, followed by Andreeva at 9-1, and then Maddie Keys at 18-1. Everybody else, 25-1 and longer. What you like? By the way, no sighting of Marketa Vondrousova either, Drew, I should point out. Yeah.
Where's she at?
Yeah, she was sharper at the French than I was expecting.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Tats.
Tats.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Wrigley Field, by the way.
Wrigley Field set up this year an album store.
Sorry, Drew.
And we asked Drew a question, and we're like, "Never mind, Drew. We gotta talk about this."
Sorry.
If you, when you enjoy the Cubs today, be sure to swing by and get the quintessential fifth album from Sly and the Family Stone. There's a riot going on. I don't know if you guys are watching the news, but there is a riot going on right down the street here. The ladies Wimbledon, wide open. It's just as the same as the French. I mean, I guess there are fewer in the mix for Wimbledon for the women's on than there were for the on clay. But top six here, your winner comes from one of them. I don't see a huge difference between Sabalenka and Rybakina as your top tier. So if you were to give me one shot, one kill, it's Rybakina 6-1, or Rybakina just goes further than Sabalenka. People forget Sabalenka did not play in this tournament last year. She was dealing with a shoulder injury and she's somewhat accomplished on grass. And honestly, with her conduct upon losing the French Open,
I talked about this yesterday.
One has to wonder, does women's tennis now have its villain? It's no longer Iga Swiatek. It's now Aryna Sabalenka. The poor sportsmanship that she put on display she was soundly defeated by Goff, specifically playing into her weaknesses. Like, I cannot believe that she would not give Goff the respect that she deserved after that performance, because Goff did... She did exactly what she needed to do to win that match.
Well,
I said yesterday.
Yeah, I said yesterday, I'm like, listen, it's like the gambler who every time they win, it's their genius. But every time they lose, the gods conspired against them kind of thing.
Yes.
Like for
that
her.
Not, great.
Yes. For her not to process that she probably got more fortunate in the semifinal with her opponent, Iga, just completely, ejecting, to use your word. And then not understanding that, and then realizing in the finals, and then coming to the conclusion in the finals, well, it was me, 70 on forced errors. No, dude, be a little, part of tennis is keeping the ball in play, right? Like, that's part of the game.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's bad.
And it's not fluky? Coco Gauff, last 52 on clay, her return points won over 50%.
Yes.
Her break percentage, over 50%. That is elite. That is elite.
Drew, and her combined clay was 110. When I do return percentage, when you do the data, her serve and her return. So her numbers, clay, were the best, more than Iga. We're talking 6 months, more than Iga, more than Arena. Yes. So there's nothing fluky about it. Nothing. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why the +198 was the most ridiculous price of the year in the final. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. No disagreement. And especially because Goff was fresher and she could make Sabalenka run, try to make her run. Sabalenka, man, she, her, you know, no, you want to, you know, we can be critical, I think, of her, you know, her movement out there. She lives, you know, stomp around like Frankenstein, like, yeah, make her move side to side, and she is not an effective player at all, and she hits on forced errors, which is exactly what Coco made her do. So yeah, I thought Coco was magnificent. I think she deserves more credit than she's getting, and I love that we now have a villain in Sabalenka. I will be against her at Wimbledon. I don't think that she's necessarily got the right.
Ooh, we lost Drew right there.
Yeah, Markéta Vondrousova, 35-1.
35-1. The reason I bring up Vondrousova, by the way, she won Wimbledon 2 years ago and had won two grass court matches her entire life before then. We didn't even mention her in the Wimbledon podcast that preceded that. So Vondrousova's 35-1. She's in the Naomi Osaka strata of odds to win the tournament. Naomi, who is not the player she once was, four-time Grand Slam champ, she's also 35-1. To the NBA, and we'll work on getting Drew back. But I just want to, let me just put it this way to you, because you're an OKC guy, and I know Drew is as well. What would have to, short of injury, what is the scenario where Indiana wins this series? What is the adjustment they make that gets them to the promised land?
Oh, boy. It's a great question. Siakam becomes a monster against a smaller OKC unit, but OKC then would probably counter by going big.
Too big, man.
I'm going to kind of avoid your question, but everybody out there that just thinks it's like, well, Halliburton's got to put up 40 points. It's going to drive me insane. That's just not the type of player that Tyrese Halliburton is. Like, yes, he needs to be adding more scoring, but him getting that whole offense involved is what he does so well. So it will be a combination of things that happen on the Indiana side.
Why is the NBA so, like, sports talk radio specific to the NBA? Because you don't hear this in other sports as much. They are so obsessed, obviously, with the LeBron versus Jordan thing. But now the whole thing is Tyrese Halliburton a superstar or not? And it's just like hours of programming on this. Who cares? We'll find out.
Best tweet I saw all NBA playoffs, and I forget who set it out, but it was when the SGA foul merchant stuff came up. And they're like, let me get this straight. We're all complaining in the beginning of the playoffs that the whole NBA shoots way too many threes. Now the best mid-range artist in the game is getting fouled too much. This is what we're complaining about? Like, what's okay anymore?
Drew Dinsick back with us. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
Oh, and that was on me.
OKC, obviously you are well invested in the Thunder. They're 5.5-point favorites in Game 3. Are you playing Game 3, either side or total?
Yeah, I think the Thunder are the bet here on out. I think they win in 5. But I think the market is razor sharp. If you're betting these games, you are looking for some action. I don't think you are playing an edge. My fare for the series is, the series price is what, -525. My fare is like -583, so I'm a little bit higher, but not much. Series to go 5 games +175 is a decent bet, I think. This is all kind of recognizing that the Pacers are they're a live dog. It's just they have too many players who just don't really belong on the court with these guys. And the Thunder have so many who can, you know, they go so deep. I think the adjustment, to your question to Kelly, the adjustment that would spook me as a Thunder guy is if Carlisle shortens his rotation and just goes with his best five for like 40 minutes. I think that would surprise Dagenau. And I think in general that five is pretty good against the Thunder's best five. So that's probably their best chance. They can't live and die on this fluky stuff. To answer your question about why NBA analysis has turned into, you know, sports talk radio, hot talk, you know, hot take, you know, theater. That's how people are consuming the sport now, because
no one watches regular season.
The reality is it's not the NFL, and the people who they are trying to appeal to are people who love the NFL. And so what they mostly just want to hear is, you know, just shade. They want to hear shade. They want drama. They want to confirm their bias that this is not as good a product as what they love, which is football. Like I'm almost sure that that's, at the core here. And if you are stuck in that mindset and you're missing out on a historic performance by one of the best NBA teams we have seen in the last 20 years, then that's on you.
And I would argue if somehow Indiana pulls it off, as I've said numerous times, of the greatest playoff runs in any sport we've ever seen. So I'm totally with you. That's as good an answer as you'll find. Drew, thank you, sir. Appreciate it as always.
Best of luck, guys. Best of luck, Thunder.
Drew Dinsick, everybody, at @whale_capper. A little hockey next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you're into futures wagering, fantasy, or just like the thrill of calling your shot, you need to check out xcuta.com. That's X-C-U-T-T-A. And it's basically the future of how we play. Think of it like combining a live auction with the strategy of sports betting. You choose who you want to bid on, players, teams, golfers, even horse racing. Over 1,000 athletes and teams to choose from across every major sport. You set the terms, build your own auction, and invite your friends to play. You could even start auctions for free. It's like creating your own mini sports book with your crew, and it's addictively fun. Kelly, you got yourself a crew, don't you? Yeah, you can call my crew over and play. Here's the hookup. Email, get this down now, support@xcuta.com. Mention VSiN, and they'll send you a special 3-month player promo code to get started. Again, that's xcuta.com, X-C-U-T-T-A. Futures wagering just got a serious upgrade.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Different. Hey, anybody who's trying a different spin, different concept on stuff?
Yeah, it's a little bit like a Calcutta, right, with the cutta at the end.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
I'm
assuming.
silly me didn't even figure that out. I'm like, X-Cutta. Oh, Calcutta. There you go. Steve the Proxy. I have a musical recommendation for Kelly. Eazy-E had his own rendition of I'd Rather Be With You. He'd be best served to listen to it on his own or headphones. It's a little less radio friendly than other sampled versions.
Yes.
Yeah. I love when people come up with musical recommendations. Tom F. He adds just a bit less radio friendly. Yes, LOL. And then Ryan Hyatt, after his effortless throwaway line this morning with Gil and Kelly, I'm now forced to wonder what Whale Capper would wear to a riot. That was a strange little throwaway line he had in the middle there.
Well, yeah, I don't...
Non sequitur.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Me and you are not watching the news right now?
We're watching. Okay. I just didn't know it was like...
Right down the street?
Yeah, I didn't know that, and I didn't know how it came up in that conversation.
I don't know if you caught my line earlier. I was right outside the Bellagio the other night.
Oh, as am I all the time.
Yeah, yeah, that was a little too close for comfort.
What Kelly's referring to, there was a shooting outside the Bellagio. It was a low-rate YouTube beef. And a guy murdered two people.
Incredible.
And again, what if I decided that night I'm going to go get some at the Bellagio? It could be anybody.
I was standing right out there outside the fountains. We were heading into Mayfair afterward. Like, oh, wow, that's cool.
Anyway, that's a different show. Kelly and I will do that after hours.
Yeah.
On VSiN triple plus. Let's talk some hockey. This gentleman is kind enough to join us for the first time on the show. We had his co-host on with us a couple weeks back. Paul Bruno joins us now, co-host of the RotoWire Fantasy Hockey Podcast, Puckcast, with Statsman and AJ, as they call it. You can follow him at Statsman22. He joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Paul, nice to meet you, man. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you guys, too.
Paul, you were saying off air, it's only fair that we have the both of you on now. You balance out the Paul your co-host
AJ
both together on the show.
Yeah, but I get top billing though.
Okay, I'll just make sure. Just making sure. I made this mistake yesterday with our buddy Jay Kahn when talking about the NHL, and I don't want to make the mistake again today. I want to start with Conn Smythe. And then we'll get to the games itself. Obviously, Florida wins yesterday to take a 2-1 lead over the Oilers in the best-of-7 Stanley Cup final. They do so, I don't know if the phrase is on the strength of, but 85 penalty minutes by the Oilers certainly was the headline of this game as the Panthers win it 6-1. If the Panthers, now in the driver's seat, end up winning this, there's still a lot of doubt as to who might win the Conn Smythe Trophy. If you were a betting man right at this moment, who might you put your money behind?
Well, I'm torn between two players. If you're going to look at the offense, certainly Stan Bennett is the guy who leads everybody in goal scoring in these playoffs. He's got 14 tallies in his 20 games played, and Leon Draisaitl is up next with 10. And Bennett's been a big game player all through these playoffs, and he's going to be a free agent next year, and all he's doing is adding maybe $500,000 with every goal that he scores along the way to his next contract. But the other guy that's making a strong case for himself is a late season pickup from Boston, if you can believe, Florida and Boston pull off a deal. Brad Marchand has been everything you could ask for and more in terms of a trade deadline acquisition having an impact. He got 21 points in 20 games, but that just is the tip of the iceberg for this guy telling his story. He's mixing it up on every shift, and it's kind of funny to watch because he's about a foot shorter than most of the guys he goes up against, and he doesn't give any quarter. He just plays and plays and sticks his nose in. And if you play against him, you hate him. If you got him on your team, you love this guy.
Sam Bennett, by the way, plus 175 to win Conn Smythe. Brad Marchand at 4-1. I brought this up as well. And full disclosure, I have a ticket on Leon Draisaitl to win Conn Smythe, to win the Conn Smythe trophy, if in fact Edmonton wins this. And I'm sort of amazed, and I get it, it's Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid's plus 250. Draisaitl's now 12-1. I get that McDavid is a shorter shot. I can't really reconcile that it's this big of a gap. Draisaitl, 3 overtime game winners here in this postseason. That ties the record. If a fourth comes along, let's say, in this series, can you really keep this away from him at that point?
Well, you can make that case, but what about if Connor McDavid goes off in the next 3 or 4 games and gets up to over 40 points again? That total has only been achieved a couple of times in hockey history. A fellow named Gretzky did it a couple of times, if I remember correctly. And so it depends on the threshold that these players reach in terms of their individual achievements. And, you know, Edmonton does have to come back to get those guys in the conversation. Right now, it's not looking very good for them. I got to say that.
They do have to come back, that's for sure. And, yeah, no, I have no doubt about the scenario you paint. My question is just, should it really be that big of a gap? That's the curious part to me. As far as Game 4 is concerned, Paul, it is Thursday night. It is a couple nights from now, as both the NBA and the NHL sort of, drag this out, more in the NBA's case than the NHL's. But it's back in Florida. The Panthers, a minus 148 favorite in Game 4. That's a tick higher. They were taking money all day yesterday, and it kept ticking upward, got to about minus 142 on the Panthers after it had opened about 10 cents lower than that. Now we're at minus 148 in Game 4. Obviously, you can't commit 85 minutes of penalties, 21 penalties for 85 minutes, so that's obviously got to get cleaned up. But other than that, do you see a different outcome, or are all these games their own little entities?
Well, you can certainly see that Florida's dictating the pace. That kind of hockey game that you saw last night was not the way Edmonton wants or needs to play to be competitive in this series. But they've been drawn into the pit of a fight, and that's the way Florida loves it. And it's a pivotal game. Look, Florida wins. They go up 3-1. The Panthers won't lose the series if it goes that way. But if it goes to 2-2 with an Edmonton win, home ice goes back in Edmonton's favor. And you never know. It's a short series. Maybe McDavid and Draisaitl will go off. That gives them a chance. So it all rides on the outcome of Game 4 for me. I want to see if the Panthers can continue to dictate the pace, guys, and the style of play. That's the challenge for Edmonton, to kind of flip the script. And the other little sidebar is the Oilers goalie, Skinner, was bounced from the starting from the net because he gave up 5 goals.
Yeah.
And it's not the first time he's been replaced. And you wonder if they make a surprise and put Cal Pickard in to start Game 4. That would be kind of a shocking development. But Oilers are back against the wall, and they've got to try something to shake things up, because if it starts out with the style of play that we've seen, a lot of action that the Florida Panthers generate is even after the whistle. And they continue to roughhouse, and with all the face washing and all that stuff, the referees are letting them get away with it. So they're going to continue to push that envelope until that changes, and I don't see it changing. It's just the way these playoffs have unfolded. The Panthers have continued to push the envelope and stretch the limits of the rules, and they're not paying for it. It's Edmonton that got penalized 4 times in the first period the other day in that last game, and I saw it in that game in the series against the Leafs. They had 4 penalties called against them in the first period. If you would have put money on it, you would have said, no way, Florida's the team that's more likely to draw 4 fouls. But it's the opposition that's doing it, and it's because the Panthers play that style that just makes them get under your skin repeatedly, and you go and do undisciplined stuff like getting delay of game penalties and getting caught with the retaliatory fouls. And if that continues, they're playing Florida's game.
And let me just ask you a sports talk radio question on the way out. If Florida does manage to pull this off, and again, they're up 2-1, so they're in the driver's seat here. This will be back-to-back. It'll be back-to-back, obviously, against the Oilers in Stanley Cup Finals. But it'll be back-to-back championships, and I'm not suggesting you would compare them with, you know, the greatest hockey dynasties of the past. This is certainly not in 70s Islanders or the Gretzky's Oilers or Lemieux's Penguins or anything like that. But in terms of modern-day hockey, where would you start to stack this team up?
A notch below the clubs that you mentioned. It would be their second consecutive. And in these days of the salary cap, particularly in Florida's case, they've got a few free agents that they will have difficulty retaining. We already talked about two of them in Bennett and Marchand. So it really doesn't look good for them to continue this long term. And don't forget, Bobrovsky is 36 years of age, too, getting a little long in the tooth for a goalie on this stage. Despite that fact, he's been the number one goalie in this postseason. But there are a lot of factors that, to me, that mitigate the likelihood of Florida extending this dynasty-like level of play beyond this season. I think this could be a last hurrah for a lot of guys in this group.
Yeah, similar to the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won two out of three, or won back-to-back, but then lost in the Stanley Cup Final the third year. Florida lost to the Golden Knights, would win two in a row if they win this. Maybe perhaps like Tampa Bay, that's where it ends. A pleasure, Paul. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
It was mostly mine, but I hope I topped AJ. That's all my goal.
It's in your file. You did it. Thank you, sir. Coming back to recap.
Take care.